From the City of Angels off the Pacific Ocean, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be, across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie, and welcome to Coast AM in Ohio. Hello tonight to Ken and Lynn, avid coast-to-coast listeners, and those working there in the Volkswagen North American plant in Auburn Hills, Michigan, gathered around your radio. Don't get caught, but thanks for listening. Next hour, we talk about your safety and that of your family with Randall Fitzgerald, author of The 100-Year Lie. Well, a big story breaking out of Egypt, Zahi Hawass, the head of antiquities there, jumping for joy, the centuries-old search for the mummy of Queen Hatshepsut, Egypt's most famous female pharaoh, may finally have ended. According to the Discovery Channel, Egypt's antiquities head Zahi Hawass will announce at a news conference in Cairo on Wednesday the most important find in Egypt's Valley of the Kings since the discovery of Tutankhamun in 1922. A broken tooth apparently was the latest clue which led archaeologists to explore the possibility that they had indeed found her. Now, they found the mummy in 1903, but they just finally figured out that they had the queen. Isn't that a fascinating story? Zahi is happy about this. As we've been reporting, the CIA has released hundreds of pages of internal reports on agency misconduct that triggered a scandal in the mid-1970s over domestic spying. The documents also detail assassination plots against foreign leaders like Fidel Castro, the testing of mind and behavior-altering drugs like LSD on unwitting citizens, wiretapping of American journalists, spying on civil rights and anti-Vietnam War protesters, opening mail between the United States, the Soviet Union, and China, break-ins at the homes of ex-CIA employees, and others. Jerry Corsi, of course, we tap into for many stories, and we are doing it with him on this one as well. 693 pages of released documents, Jerry. And you know what? It absolutely nauseates me to know that they were doing things like that.
Oh, well, George, it's a great honor to be back with you. And these documents are still shocking today. I mean, there's hundreds of pages in here that touch on subjects that continue to be of interest even in the Kennedy assassination. I mean, these plots to assassinate Fidel Castro involving mafia figures like Johnny Rosselli, Robert Mayhew, who was tied to Howard Hughes. I mean, these documents lead down trails that still have not been fully explained, and it's still shocking to know that the CIA was conducting investigations on some 10,000 U.S. citizens, including journalists, just because the journalists were interviewing and pursuing stories that the CIA didn't want pursued. It's a shocking period in our history, and it makes you wonder how much of it is still going on.
Well, I was going to say, Jerry, I'd love to see documents from today, but I don't think they're going to release those, are they?
Well, that's right. These documents, George, go back to 1973, when James Schlesinger was head of the CIA, and they've been combed over by three or four congressional panels already, including the Church Committee in the 70s. But it just reaffirms to me, George, there's probably a treasure trove of documents in the CIA that would be completely scandalous and would rewrite major chapters in U.S. history, including the origins of the Vietnam War. I'm sure there are shocking details yet to come out on the Kennedy assassination, the ties between the mob and the CIA that go back to these plots to kill Castro. It's a shocking history, and it makes you want to see entirely all the nooks and crannies of the CIA to see how much hidden history is yet to be revealed.
Well, it's so amazing, too, Jerry, is we always heard rumors that they wanted to kill people like Castro. We always heard rumors that they were using behavior and mind-altering drugs on citizens who didn't know what was going on. You know, people have called this program saying, somebody is bombarding me with some kind of electronic messages. Some people laughed at these people, Jerry. I don't think you could laugh at them anymore.
Well, you know, George, that's an excellent point. Many of the journalists, the reporters, the investigators who brought out the CIA shocking misdeeds for the last 35 years have been ridiculed as conspiracy theorists or nutcases. Now it turns out These documents even further validate that these charges were true. The CIA was involved in plots to kill Castro. We know the connections between the plumbers, Howard Hunt, who was in the White House working with Nixon. It makes even things that have come out recently, Howard Hunt's deathbed confession.
Yes, which we played. We played a portion of that on the program.
Broken on Coast to Coast, naming Cord Meyer, who was a CIA agent whose wife had a long affair with John Kennedy, Mary Pinchot, brought LSD into the White House. All of these stories, it turns out now, George, are true.
Absolutely. Our Ian Punnett played that tape first well over a month and a half ago.
And a shocking tape yet today. And it leads to many more questions being needing to be investigated, that Howard Hunt had denied all of his life until his deathbed, and Coast to Coast had the original tape and broke it for the first time. It leads, with connections to these documents, to many, many more trails that need to be investigated yet within the CIA.
Jerry Corsi writes regularly for WorldNet Daily, a very celebrated author as well. What's new on your plate, Jerry?
Well, George, I've been all day on the radio, and the last couple of days, my new book, Late Great USA, which deals with the North American Union and the reason why George Bush is insistent that our borders remain open. Security and Prosperity Partnership promising to open our borders with Mexico and Canada. There are groups now, George, that have been organizing, especially after the vote today in the Senate, to go to Amazon.com to send copies of the book to the senators. I think it's going to be another firestorm, and I'm looking forward to being with you. I think we're scheduled here on July 11th to come in and do an in-studio interview, and I'm very much looking forward to it.
Okay, Jerry, we'll see you then.
Thank you, George. Right. Thank you. An honor to be with you tonight.
That's Jerry Corsi. And in just a few moments, with the release of these CIA documents, we're going to be going to Richard Dolan, who's been investigating these all day, because there were some UFO cases in these CIA reports. A UN report shows that the runaway train of drug addiction has slowed, with an estimated levels of global use holding steady for the third year in a row. However, listen to this. Afghanistan's opium production has increased dramatically. In 2007, World Drug Report, released by the Vienna-based UN Office of Drugs and Crime, found that 200 million people, or 5%, they say, of the world's population aged between 15 and 64 had used drugs at least once in the previous 12 months. But they say Afghanistan has produced dramatically more opium in 2006, increasing its yield of opium by nearly 50% from a year earlier and pushing global opium production to a new record high, way higher than when the Taliban was involved in Afghanistan. At least one petrol station has been set on fire in the Iranian capital of Tehran after the government announced fuel rationing for private motorists. What's going on there? Iranians were given only 2 hours' notice of the move that limits private drivers to 100 liters of fuel a month. Despite its huge energy reserves, Iran lacks refining capacity, forcing it to import about 40% of its petrol. Apparently, they fear that the UN, the West, could sanction its petrol imports and cripple its economy, so they're starting to tighten up, and the Iranians are not too happy about that. The story we've been following here on Coast to Coast, a very sad story of the 13-year-old girl whose feet were severed in an accident at an amusement park ride in Kentucky, is now in stable condition in Nashville, Tennessee, in a hospital there. Caitlin Lassiter was riding the Superman Tower of Power ride Thursday at Six Flags Kentucky when a cable broke loose on the ride and severed her feet above the ankles. Authorities and people at the hospital declined to say whether her feet were reattached. A fisherman had two of his fingertips reattached after cutting them away to free himself from a sinking boat. He's 51 years old, and he did this minutes before his future son-in-law showed up with tools that would have freed him. But they were fishing on a river when the 16-foot drift boat was just swept away. The boat slammed against a log, pinning this man in his left index and middle fingers. The pressure of the water held the boat in place. The only way for him to get away was to sever them, and he kept them, and they've reattached them. A Tennessee man survived an attack by an alligator while retrieving a golf ball at a Florida golf course. Bruce Berger of Tennessee reached into a pond at the sixth hole of the Lake Venice Golf Club when the alligator apparently grabbed his right forearm. The alligator latched onto his forearm, pulled him into the pond, but he used his left arm to beat on the reptile until it freed him. Officers caught the gator, and, they've taken him out of the pond. If you go to the coasttocoastam.com website, take a look at the story of the Tunguska crater. Scientists have identified a possible crater left by what they say could have been the biggest space impact in modern times, the Tunguska event. The blast leveled more than 2,000 square kilometers of forest near the Tunguska River in Siberia on the 30th of June, 1908. A comet or asteroid is thought to have exploded in the Earth's atmosphere with a force equal to 1,000 Hiroshima bombs. A university team says a lake near the epicenter of the blast may be occupying a crater hollowed out by a chunk of rock that hit the ground. It's an incredible picture. Go take a look at that. And researchers will visit the Upper Peninsula of Michigan next month to search for Bigfoot. The expedition will center in eastern Marquette County, where apparently they get a lot of Bigfoot reports. So we'll update you on that situation with their investigation. Also on the coasttocoastam.com website, our feature article has to do with a possible explanation of strange craft sightings. You know, the story we've been following that Chad sent us, the UFO, the drone, whatever it might be, and it is interesting because we believe that Chad is from Lake Tahoe, California, where everything seems to be burning now with fires, huge fires. But read the story on the coasttocoastam.com website, because we got an email from a person going by the alias of Isaac, and he is presenting an explanation for these sightings. And he basically says this is based on a program he was involved with in 1980s in Palo Alto, based on extraterrestrial technology. And Linda Moulton Howe will be our first hour guest Thursday night. We'll talk with her a little bit about this. In a moment, Richard Dolan, as we explore the CIA documents and UFOs on Coast to Coast AM. Richard Dolan, author of The UFOs in the National Security State. He's been on the program quite often, and we're talking with Richard today about the CIA release documents, and he started looking at them for UFO reports. And lo and behold, Richard, you found a few, huh?
Well, sort of, George, and sort of not.
How are you?
Doing great.
Good.
Thanks for having me on, man.
Man, my pleasure. My pleasure. First of all, interesting that the CIA would even have anything in files, past or present, about UFOs. Why would they do that?
Well, that's very logical and not surprising at all when you consider that the UFO phenomenon's been objectively observed and measured, in fact, by military personnel around the world. If the CIA is in another part of the world, whether it's North Africa or whether it's Europe or hanging out by the Soviet Union, and they get wind of certain cases, they're going to take an interest in that, if nothing else, to determine whether or not that's somebody's foreign technology. So the CIA has collected UFO reports and frequently forwarded them on to a variety of agencies, whether in the U.S. and also internationally. So that we know. The funny thing about the whole history of that is for many, many years, of course, in the 1950s and 60s, the CIA was able to maintain that they had absolutely no interest in UFO reports. And there were always researchers who said, well, I don't really think that's true, but they couldn't prove anything one way or the other until really the mid-1970s, when the Freedom of Information Act in this country became something that was useful, got some teeth, and suddenly thousands of pages of documents were released. Some pretty good ones, some documents that really indicated strong interest at times by CIA, and which refer to various types of military encounters and so forth. The best documents, to be honest with you, are military ones and some FBI documents that refer to military encounters, but there's some good ones in the CIA. Now, this whole thing about the release today, of the fabled family jewels. This is what these documents, which were very well described by Jerry in the last segment. There's no UFO documents in those at all. And in fact, there was a story that started making the rounds yesterday, as far as I can tell, that talked about new released UFO documents. I was kind of confused by this. I thought, what? New UFO documents? I wasn't aware of this. So I hunted around, and indeed I saw the link. I saw what they were talking about. But I'm going to tell you, these are not newly released documents. I've had these in my own collection for years.
They're just throwing them out again?
Yeah, well, I don't know. Maybe they didn't have it on their site, but they've been out. You can go to John Greenwald's The Black Vault.
He's had them.
He's had them for years. And, in fact, I printed them off. There's hundreds of pages. I had them on my shelf. I'm looking at this one. There's a lot of these CIA documents that they released, which were basically news clippings of Soviet stuff when the Soviet Union was falling apart.
Almost like they were just disseminating information.
Yeah, exactly. Okay. So the Soviet press would record some amazing things that were happening in the Soviet Union in 1989, 1990. I mean, just extraordinary stuff. It's all going into my next book, by the way. but the thing was, those reports were monitored by CIA, and they were forwarded, and they've been available for it about close to 10 years. Greenwald's had them for that long. He's put them on his website. They've been available. It's quite possible. I haven't really kept up on the CIA's management of their FOIA database. It's possible that they have not had them on the web. So maybe this seems new to some people.
Right.
You know, to be honest with you, it's old news. Some of the reports in there are very, very compelling. There's a UFO encounter over Moscow in early 1990, during the period when we had the Belgian Triangle being witnessed by thousands of people in Western Europe. Well, guess what? The Soviet Union was also experiencing triangle sightings as well, and some really remarkable craft that were just showing capabilities far, far beyond anything that we can do. And there were Soviet generals being interviewed, and a lot of those are in the CIA documents. One, you can go through them and read them. So that's a good thing. One thing I wanted to mention about this release today of the so-called family jewels, I went through it, picked through it. It's supposed to be 693 pages of documents. Do you want to guess how many of those documents have absolutely zero? How many pages have no information whatsoever?
You mean they were just lines of gibberish?
Nope, lines of nothing.
Lines
white
of nothing?
Out,
just white it out
white
paper?
It out.
Now, that's a good question. I have no idea.
148.
Of the 693,
yeah,
148 were blank?
148 were, nearly all of those were blank, or some had just zero information, like it was a blank form or a whited out form, so it might as well have been blank. Yeah, I counted 148.
Well, though, these 148, I mean, you're not saying that they were blacked out or anything like
that.
Well,
they wiped them out now.
Oh, they wiped, okay, so they were real documents at one
time.
Yeah,
they're all redacted. They're edited. They're censored.
Oh, my God. Well, so who knows what they would have said?
Well, for example, people have been talking about the, you know, how the CIA's released all this information. Well, the CIA did release these documents to the various congressional committees back in the 70s. And that's really how we know what's in these documents, because what happened in 1975 is the Church Committee got really into this. They spent 2 years investigating this. Okay, and so on the basis of various leads that were in some of these documents, and they didn't get 150 censored pages, they got everything, they were able to really dig out, like, the mind control program that the CIA was, I mean, some grisly, horrific mind control experiments sponsored by CIA. Almost none of those are referred to in the released documents today. I mean, I looked around for all the behavior modification, mind control stuff. Maybe I passed by it, but it's very easy to miss. I don't think it's in there.
It's like they edited them a little closer this time. Yeah.
Gone. And then the reference to, you know, the CIA influence and almost domination of parts of U.S. media during the 1950s and 60s. We know that this is the case. There's been a lot of work done on it. There's none of that in the family jewels. There's no reference to the fact that the CIA had hundreds of journalists on their payroll in the 1950s and 60s who were working for them covertly. That's not in the family jewel.
Do you think this was a selective release of documents, Richard?
No, what I think it is, the family jewels themselves, I mean, these documents have been what they are for the last 35 years. What happened was in the early 70s...
I'll tell you what, hold on, yeah. Richard. We'll be right back with you. We'll also open up the phone lines, those of you who want to chat with Richard Dolan, because he's an author of the book called UFOs in the National Security State. He's looked at all of them. I'll be back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. Randall Fitzgerald right around the corner as we talk about some incredible things that they are pumping into this country that could affect all of us, your health, your life. In a moment, we'll be right back with Richard Dolan. We'll take your phone calls on Coast to Coast AM. Richard, you think the good stuff, the good documents are just hidden away somewhere in some office, some file cabinet?
I think the good documents are either hidden or destroyed. Gone far, far away. These family jewels, what struck me in the review of them is that, I mean, if we had no idea about the stuff that was in these documents, we've known about these things for over 30 years now.
Right.
And we've known that the CIA has done domestic spying on so-called political dissidents who are often labeled as terrorists. That ought to sound interesting to people today. That phrase was bandied about in some of the documents. You know, people and students for democratic society were labeled as possible terrorists. There are things that we know that the CIA has done as a result of these documents. However, there's nothing in these that is new, first of all. And there's a lot that's edited out, so you don't know what's in there. I can tell you from the UFO angle that in all the history of released documents relating to UFOs, nearly all of them are at the level of secret or of a lower level of classification. In other words, there's almost practically no top secret UFO documents that we have available to us. The reason that that's significant is that we have one specific document that explicitly states that the UFO matter was considered top secret, so it was at that level of classification. And yet none of those documents have come down to us. What that means is that there's clearly a large mass of documents that we have never, ever seen on the UFO topic and undoubtedly on a whole bunch of other topics. And that this release, to me, it's a symbol of the arrogance of power that CIA can just say, look, we're going to release these family jewels, all 693 pages, which they very nicely numbered.
Mm-hmm.
150 are basically not there. And then I didn't even mention there's a bunch of that are duplicates of each other. I would estimate maybe 20, 25 documents are just duplicates that appear scattered throughout. And then there's a bunch that are, they're not a zero, but they're an almost zero. So maybe another 100 of those or more are essentially devoid of any true information. So there's a lot less than what meets the eye. And to be honest with you, this is a very typical kind of thing when governments release the documents. I remember a few years ago when the British Ministry of Defense released their so-called UFO files, a lot that had to do with the Rendlesham case in 1980.
Right.
Tons and tons of dupes, lots of just useless, honestly, documents that had nothing to do with anything, but these were considered part of the file. And something as serious as the UFO phenomenon, and it is serious, for anyone who doesn't get it by now, they have to get on board here, because we're talking about technological objects that are being seen, that are being engaged by our military and also the militaries of other nations. So those guys are taking it seriously. So when you have a phenomenon of that level of seriousness, and we can hardly get, I mean, anything in the last several decades, it's very, very difficult. That spigot's been turned right off. We have a problem. We have a disconnect here between what we like to tell ourselves as a society, that is the people who still believe in openness and freedom and self-government. And then the reality of the fact is that, you know, we're more like subjects than citizens in a lot of ways. We don't really have the leverage and the power to get information about these topics that are so important to our lives.
The release of these documents today could also be a little mind game, don't you think?
Oh, absolutely, I do. And in fact, the whole gathering together of them 30, 35 years ago was really more damage control than anything else. It wasn't like the CIA leadership just said, oh, gosh, you know, we've been doing all these things and we need to change our way. What was happening is that in the early 70s, there was, you know, you had Vietnam really building up, and then Watergate broke, and the CIA leadership said, oh, my God, this could really blow up on us.
Yeah.
We need to find out all the stuff that we've done that could damage us politically, and let's just deal with it. Let's just deal with it to Congress in as open a way as we can before they have to ferret it out on us. So, I mean, it's laudable that they went through this process to gather this information, but let's keep in mind they were really doing it to save their own skin.
Let's finish the hour with these phone calls. East of the Rockies, welcome to the program. Hi there.
How you doing, George?
Good, thank you.
I was going to ask a question about the drugs that were used on people. My cousin, he went in 69, he went to Vietnam, but he said they gave him a shot in both of his upper thighs. They claimed it was penicillin, but he said it hurt like crazy. It felt like his muscles were cramping. He came back, and by 1976, he was in a wheelchair. By 1980, he was dead.
You know, Joyce Riley has long said on this program and on her own that she believes a lot of our military, Richard, that they are being tested with vaccines.
Listen, this is absolutely the case. I'm sure that there are many people out there listening who've spoken directly to soldiers. I have, and who tell me about things that they get. They try to ask. If they ask what they're getting, they're immediately shut down. Like, you know, just take it. Don't give us a hassle. There are soldiers occasionally who try to speak up, and they have to pay for it. They get disciplinary action at times. They don't know what they're getting. I have a second cousin who actually had the same kind of thing happen to him, incidentally. He was in Vietnam. He went in. He was a sharp, tough 18, 19-year-old guy. Came back. Something happened to him, and he just spent the rest of his life just pacing back and forth in his room.
Jeez.
I've talked to other people in the military. Here's a really creepy story, but I happen to believe it. I spoke to a woman about 10 years ago who had been in the military from 1978 to 1982. She did some kind of top secret stuff. Don't know what it was. What she told me about was her method of discharge from the military. And she said her debriefing went through several phases. Phase one, she said, was just counseling, so that she would sit down with her debriefing officer, and he'd say, okay, let's get your story straight. You didn't do this, you did this. Get it, right? That's pretty typical. Stage two, she said, she was subjected to hostile interrogation, however you want to envision that, while having to take sodium pentothal or some type of drug under that influence to see what she would reveal if she were captured by enemy and tortured. Stage three, she said, this is in 1982. She said, I went into this room with a bunch of guys in civilian clothing, which made me feel better, she said. I'm thinking, really? How they could make me feel better? She had to put on this metal type of helmet over her head. And she said that it bombarded her with, she didn't know, but presumably some type of electromagnetic radiation to scramble up her head so that she couldn't remember what exactly she did or when she did it or did she do this or that, so that she would basically be useless in terms of giving up information. And when I met her, this was 15 years later, and I said, wow, did this mess up your memory from other parts of your life, like before, like from high school?
Right.
And she said, I honestly don't know. That's 1982. And, you know, you got to wonder. Now, I happened to believe this lady. Absolutely, I believed her. Now, maybe that's my fault that I believed her, but I think if most people were sitting across from her, they would have believed. This was before I wrote my book. It was before anyone really knew anything about me. She's just telling me this story, and I found her credible. So there are things going on in our military that, I mean, there are books upon books upon books that are waiting to be written about the things that are happening. And this is not to demean any of the fine people who are serving in the armed forces. Obviously, it's not meant to do that. It's, in fact, meant, hopefully, to protect them from you know, heinous types of experimentation. One thing we know from the 1950s, and this did come out in the 70s, CIA collaboration at Edgewood Arsenal with the U.S. Military, Army, doing all kinds of drug experimentation on U.S. soldiers at that time.
Exactly.
A lot of them were African-American.
Exactly.
And they were just given all kinds of really strong hallucinogens, and these guys were tripping for days and days and days just under observation.
They sprayed things in the skies over St. Louis. They've sprayed things over naval ships.
U.S. Army did a biological weapons testing program for 20 years from 1949 to 1969. And St. Louis was one of the first targets. They went into the St. Louis ghetto in the inner city. They said, I guess they figured, oh, well, we'll just get these people. Who cares, right? They sprayed inert versions of diseases like anthrax. It's like a disabled version of it,
God.
So you weren't actually getting anthrax. But still, in the New York City subway system in 1966, I lived in Brooklyn. I was 4 years old, and that subway system was sprayed. I mean, I myself could have been sprayed as a little boy.
Well, you never know with all these ailments people come down with, Richard. Let's take some more calls. First-time caller line. Hi there. Where are you calling from?
Bronson, Florida.
Okay, go ahead.
And first of all, thank you for taking my call, and it's an honor.
Sure, thank you.
And I have a question regarding CIA and the JFK assassination. I've seen a video circulating the net, apparently released by a gentleman, Bill Cooper, that shows the driver of the car, the Zapruder film, turning around and shooting JFK in the face. And I'm wondering if you guys have seen this, and if you have, what your take is.
You know, I have. Bill Cooper, of course, is William Cooper. It's got to be the same. He's
right.
Dead now, shot
yeah.
in a gun battle with the
right.
law enforcement. I've looked at that video, Richard. I don't see him shooting the president.
No, I don't either. However, here's a story. I was about a year and a half ago, I was doing some research at the National Archives in College Park, Maryland, with a couple of other researchers, and... one of the archivists actually came up to our group because he knew that we were the UFO conspiracy people. And he said, hey, we have a what appears to be a different pristine tape of the Kennedy assassination. We don't know how we got it, and we got this thing. And, you know, maybe we can show you. Well, wouldn't you know it, I had a flight to leave, like, that day. I couldn't stick around. And some of my colleagues did stick around, and they supposedly watched it. And in this film, the guy says, to me, it looks like the driver's shooting Kennedy. And I'm thinking, no way. One of the people I was with was Ryan Wood, a researcher.
Sure.
And I spoke with Ryan about this later. I said, well, what did you see? Because he actually stayed for the filming. And he said, well, I couldn't really make much out. It didn't. He wasn't sure if it was as Cooper had said or not. But I was amazed, frankly, that story had the staying power that it did. When I first came across that claim, which was many years ago, I confess I just thought it's pure insanity. And you know, I've seen the Zapruder tape. We've all seen it, right? Doesn't happen. But who knows? You know, one thing that's important to remember is that film disappeared for 10 years after Kennedy was assassinated. It was gone. Okay, so he gets killed, it gets bought by Life magazine, and no one sees it until Geraldo Rivera, I think in 1975 or something, shows it. Now, where was it all this time? Well, my guess is NPIC, National Photographic Interpretation Center, with CIA.
Oh, absolutely.
That's the best. They're the best candidate, and there's good reason to believe that. So in other words, these are the best photo film expert analysts in the world, certainly at that time, probably now. And if you're going to manipulate it, those are the guys to do it. So at this point, who really knows?
Well, and again, after some of the things we've known about, some of the things we've read today, you're exactly right. Who really knows?
We have come so far.
What do you believe?
So far. I mean, 50, 60 years ago, if you had suggested that Franklin Roosevelt and George Marshall had an inkling about Pearl Harbor before it happened, that has strung you up. And if people actually believe that Roosevelt knew, he wouldn't have been impeached. He'd have been imprisoned. Okay? Now, it's not proven that he actually had foreknowledge, but it's at least a very widely accepted thesis among the academicians that indeed he wanted it and let it happen. Okay? It takes a long time, in other words, for historians and the academic world to catch up to the realities, especially the biggest truths, like Pearl Harbor, like the Kennedy assassination, and like 9/11, and like UFOs. These things, it's taking years and decades and generations until we finally get truth out on these matters, until long after everyone's dead, until long after the truth almost becomes irrelevant.
It is incredible. Let's go to some more calls. West of the Rockies, you're on the air with us. Hi there.
Hi, how are you doing?
Good, thank you.
Yeah, I seen a UFO, and this was back in 1979, and it still really intrigues me to this day. In Fontana, California, I actually seen it coming from the 215 freeway, coming from the high desert. Mm-hmm. Oh, and it was sometime August, the summer of 1979.
Well, what did it look like, and what did it do?
It was real bright. I had a friend with me that pointed it out. It was about 10 o'clock at night. It was a real bright light, and it was up against the hills. And the strange thing is there's power lines in the Lytle Creek area of the mountains, and it was hanging around that, and I couldn't figure out what it was. And I was on the freeway, so I started flashing my headlights on my car. I was supposed to get off at Sierra Avenue. This thing distracted me, and I kept going. And then when I looked, I took my eyes off it just for a brief second. It looked like an orange, ball of light. And I was trying to figure out what it was, and John told me it's a UFO.
Yeah.
And then I took my eyes off it. It wasn't there. And I was telling John, shoot, I should have kept my eyes on it. I looked off to the left side of my window, and it had gone, maybe a 5-mile radius. I never did see it move, but it was off on the left side of my window out in the sky, and I'd say it was probably a 1/2 mile out. I got off at Highland, and I was flashing the headlights off and on in the car, and this thing started following me, so I started thinking, hey, maybe it is a UFO.
Well, if it blinked 5 miles over instantly, that would be my guess that it's a UFO.
Lots of things out there. What do you think of this British pilot and some of the passengers who see this, what they think might have been a mile-wide object?
Yeah, I've been looking into that. In fact, I nearly did a spot on TV over that one, and I got bumped because they actually got the pilot to speak. You wouldn't figure. It's an interesting case. I actually was in touch with some of the British UFO researchers and BUFORA, British UFO Research Association, just asking them, what do you think about it? Has anyone talked to this guy, and so on? It's interesting. I don't think that this is particularly the strongest case, but it's not a bad one to start with. It needs investigation. What you had, though, is this pilot, and also the pilot of another airplane, saw the same object, and they both described it as absolutely humongous size.
Yeah.
But I didn't see any description of an actual solid object. What the pilot seemed to describe, it was like this very, very long kind of bright light with like a green thing around it. There was a passenger who also saw it. So a lot of people saw this. It was not tracked on any radar that we know of. That's interesting. If it was, we don't know it.
Interesting, but not unusual.
Correct. The other thing is that...
Got a minute left, Richard.
Okay. There are a number of aviation sightings by experienced pilots of huge, just huge, mammoth types of ships, motherships. You don't get a lot of them, but they're out there, and it happens periodically. And this, I think, is possibly one. It needs more investigation.
Excellent. When do I see you at a next conference, Richard?
A couple of days in Roswell, sir. I think you're going to be there.
You will be there, and I will be there.
I will indeed. I look forward to it.
Thanks, Richard.
Thank you.
And we'll be broadcasting live in Roswell, New Mexico on the Friday night program, July 6th. So if you live in that greater area, come on out there, because I am told they are not charging you to come and see the broadcast, which is a good thing. And if they were, I would jump up and down and say, no way. I'll be back in a moment. Randall Fitzgerald joins us. You are going to be shocked with some of the things you hear.